I'm David Asherick. This is Ty Gibson. And this is the very last part of the last episode of season one of The Chosen. We've been watching The Chosen, all of The Chosen, the entire season one. And we've been having excellent fun.
Oh, man, it's been great.
It's been good, these conversations. And so we are so glad that you have chosen to join us. That you have chosen to join us. This is the second part of the episode titled, I Am He.
Oranges.
Two shekels.
Thank you. Plums.
Beautiful service from Phoenicia. Do you want some?
Yeah.
You. We don't serve your kind here.
And what kind is that?
I know what you are.
Well, lucky for you, I can serve myself. You know, to stop me, you'd have to look at me.
Take down this decree in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek, so no one can plead ignorance. By order of Rome and punishable by detention and imprisonment, religious gatherings outside the synagogue and Hebrew school are strictly prohibited. The teacher known as Jesus of Nazareth is sought for questioning.
Everyone's here?
Yes, this is all of us.
Is there anyone else? Look at this. What is that?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Gold.
A friend of mine left that for us.
It's enough for 2 weeks of food and lodging.
You came so close.
What do you mean?
We need the gopher to make it to a camp in Tiberias by nightfall.
Simon is correct. Let's go.
Thank you. gonna wear that? On a trip.
These are my clothes. Should I have others? Hello?
Elisheva, who is it?
Roman.
What's wrong? What happened? What did it mean? Follow me.
That is all he said. Matthew did not hesitate.
Follow him where?
Look, I'm sure he will come to his senses.
His senses. Do you know my son?
Do you? At the moment, he believes this man to be a prophet.
The man that healed the paralytic at Zebedee's house.
I would be careful with that word, healed. We do not know what sort of trickery or illusion may have been involved.
Matthew has no interest in illusion.
Nor in your God. Or so I thought.
Matthew upended his life to be with him. His wicked life.
He does not make decisions lightly.
That is true.
When I saw him 2 days ago, he did not seem himself. But I never would have guessed that he was preparing for this.
He asked me to deliver to you some of his personal effects.
With an eye in heaven.
The key to his house.
Luxury bought off the backs of our people. I will not accept it.
He suspected as much. Sell it. Give it away. Burn it down. I do not care. Don't burn it down. The other is just outside.
Matthew.
What? Why?
Matthew said thieves forced you to close your business.
Yes, but...
And you've been taking long journeys for your business.
Yes. I have all my permits.
Don't you get it? The roads are dangerous. Your wife is left for long periods of time alone.
Yeah.
People with bad intentions hate him.
How does it work?
One last thing. If you hear from him or receive any word of his whereabouts, contact me immediately.
Is he wanted?
Not officially. But if Jesus of Nazareth returns to Capernaum, the Praetor would like to question him. And it would be in everyone's best interest if you contact me.
We understand.
And I just want you to... Well... I know some people that were mildly fond of your son.
Hungry? Almost there.
What city is that?
Jezreel, the southernmost town in Galilee. From that river east to the Jordan River.
Rabbi, where are you going?
Do you need something? This way, friends.
I'm sorry, but the map shows that Jezreel is 2 miles southeast of here and is met by a road east of the Jordan. We need to adjust our course 30 degrees.
We're not going to the Jordan. We're going through Samaria.
Are you telling a joke?
There's a place that I want to stop. Plus, it makes our journey shorter by almost half.
And our odds of violent attack more likely by double.
Is that an exact figure?
Forgive me, teacher, but it's safer to go around Samaria by way of the Jordan than the Decapolis.
Would you join me for safety reasons?
But, Rabbi, you're Samaritans.
Good observation, Big James. What's your point?
Rabbi, these were the people that profaned our temple. With the dead bones. They hated
us. They fought against us with the Seleucids in the Maccabean Wars. Spoken to a Samaritan.
And we destroyed their temple 100 years ago.
And none of you here were present for any of these things. Listen, if we're going to have a question and answer session every time we do something you're not used to, it's going to be a very annoying time together for all of us. We'll be fine. And if we get attacked, Simon would be happy to show us what to do.
Absolutely.
Right. So follow me.
Last of Salome's bread last night.
Master, we need to go into town for food.
We can use the gold left for us at the fountain.
Very well.
There's a town about a mile west, Sicar.
You all go. I'll wait here.
Someone should stay with you, in case.
I'm all right. Meet me at that well when you come back. Give me a drink. Did you hear me?
That's bad, huh?
What?
You, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a Samaritan, and a woman.
I'm sorry. I should have said please.
You know, it's not safe for you to be alone out here.
Nor you. Why haven't you come with others? Why so late in the day? Don't women come to the wells in the cool of the morning?
Yeah, well, none of them will be seen with me, so I have to come at noon, in the heat, as you have so kindly reminded me.
Why won't they be seen with you?
Long story.
I'd still like a drink of water, if you can spare it.
Amazing what a parched throat will do. Aren't I unclean to you? Won't you be defiled by this vessel?
Maybe some of my people say that about your women, but I don't.
Yeah? And what do you say?
I say if you knew who I am, you'd be asking me for a drink.
Really?
And I would give you living water.
Would. Except that you have nothing to draw water with, and this is a deep well. Besides, what do you need from me if you have your own supply of living water?
Long story.
But Jewish water is better than Samaritan water, hmm?
That's not what I said.
Are you a better man than our ancestor Jacob, who dug this well? Your water is better than his?
I know Jacob.
and everyone who drinks this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks the water that I give him will never be thirsty again.
Wouldn't that be nice?
The water I give will become in a person a spring of water welling up to eternal life.
Really?
Yes, really.
Prove it.
First, go and call your husband and come back. I will show you both.
I don't have a husband.
You are right. You've had 5 husbands. And the man you're living with now is not your husband.
Oh, I see. You're a prophet. You're here to preach at me.
No.
Usually the one good thing about coming here alone is I can escape being condemned.
I'm not here to condemn you.
I've made mistakes. Too many. But it's men like you who have made it impossible for me to do anything about it.
How?
Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews insist Jerusalem is the only place for true worship.
They say that because the temple is there.
Yeah, exactly where we're not allowed.
I'm here to break those barriers. And the time is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father.
So, where am I supposed to go when I need God? I've never received anything from God, but I couldn't thank him even if I did.
Anywhere. God is spirit. And the time is coming and is now here that it won't matter where you worship, but only that you do it in spirit and truth. Heart and mind, that is the kind of worshiper he's looking for. It won't matter where you're from or what you've done. Do you believe what I'm telling you?
Until the Messiah comes and explains everything and sorts this mess out, including me, I don't trust in anyone.
You're wrong when you say that you've never received anything from God. This Messiah you speak of, I am he. The first one was named Ramin. You were a woman of purity who was excited to be married. But he wasn't a good man. He hurt you. And it made you question marriage and even the practice of your faith.
Stop it.
The second was Farzad. On your wedding night, his skin smelled like oranges. And to this day, every time you pass by the oranges in the market, you feel guilty for leaving him. Because he was the only truly godly man you've been with. But you felt unworthy.
Why are you doing this?
I have not revealed myself to the public as the Messiah. You are the first. It would be good if you believed me.
You picked the wrong person.
I came to Samaria just to meet you. Do you think it's an accident that I'm here in the middle of the day?
I am rejected by others.
I know. But not by the Messiah.
And you know these things. Because you are the Christ. I'm going to tell everyone.
I was counting on it.
Spirit and truth.
Spirit and truth.
It won't be all about mountains or temples.
Soon, just the heart.
You promise?
I promise.
This man told me everything I've done. Oh, he must be the Christ!
Hey, can't wait!
Your water!
You forgot your
Fancy, and now you told me everything I ever did!
Rabbi, we got food. What would you like?
I have food to eat that you do not know about. Who got you food?
Wait a minute.
You told her? Mm-hmm.
And she can tell others? What food?
My food is to do the will of him who sent me. And to accomplish his work.
You told her where you are?
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean?
It means we're going to stay here a couple of days. It's been a long time of sowing, but the fields are ripe for harvest.
And so it's time.
Let's go.
Yes!
Throw me like a stone in the water. Watch the mud rise up. Dress me like a lamb for the slaughter. Pour me in your cup. Should've known we'd bring trouble. Trouble gonna find you here.
Hey there, and I'm Dallas Jenkins, creator of The Chosen. Thank you so much for watching. You know, I'm standing on the set of season 2 of The Chosen right now. We intend to do 7 seasons of this show, and you can help us get there. If you want to know more, please check out the free Chosen app or go to thechosen.tv.
Ty, I've got to admit, I've got goosebumps here a little bit when I think about that final scene there. In fact, we've got the picture of it right here.
Yeah.
Where they're walking towards Samaria and that music is playing and it's talking about trouble.
That's how it closes. Jesus and his posse.
That's right.
They're marching down into the world.
Yeah, I like the use of the word posse there because it almost has that kind of like old school Western movie flair where... Yeah. These outsiders have come into town, but they're not coming to do damage.
Right. Well, they're going to do damage to the kingdom of darkness,
thank
brother.
Thank you. I received that correction. But I just have goosebumps because in many ways, the whole episode, it's taken place largely in Capernaum. The whole season, I should say, has been building up to this point. And now it's like Jesus has been being pulled back, get that rubber band or that arrow.
Yeah.
Right? And then all of a sudden... And he's going to be launched into season 2 and beyond. I mean, we're only in this story today. The woman at the well takes place in John chapter 4. I mean, we're just getting started. Mm-hmm. And I got that goosebump feeling when Jesus is like, let's go.
Let's go.
The harvest is ripe, white even now for the harvest. Good stuff.
So Jesus now has assembled 7 of his disciples.
7 of the
Mary's
12.
On the journey with them. And it's incredible to watch how the story has built to this point.
Yeah, agreed.
And what we're about to encounter in the longer conversation that we're going to have or comment on in that longer discussion is that what's happening is that everybody's packing up and getting ready to go.
Yeah.
Not just on a short little jaunt, but the journey of their life. It's going to be incredible. Everything is being upended.
It's not a road trip.
No.
They're moving.
Yeah.
Literally, they're moving in all of the ways. They're moving physically, they're moving geographically, they're moving
spiritually.
They're moving in all the ways.
And right now, as we're about to discover, they're heading down into Samaria. And this is where the incredible encounter happens with the Samaritan woman at the well. Mm-hmm. It's so moving, David. It just took my breath away at certain points.
No, totally. When I was watching it again, just moments before we came on here, I was literally shouting. I was like, woohoo! I mean, like shouting out loud. I couldn't contain myself.
Yeah.
We think that you're going to be shouting too when we get to the end of this episode and of our, you've seen the end of the episode, but the end of this conversation, so please stick around. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Story Encounters. I'm David Asherick. This is Ty Gibson. Ty, can you believe it? Here we are, and we've made it all the way through 8 episodes of The Chosen, 13 episodes of The Story Encounters. And what I'd like to do at the very end of this, if you don't mind, is, and so you can be thinking about it, we'll reflect back on some of our favorite moments or scenes from the whole season. Okay, but before we do that, I want to have an in-depth conversation about this episode in particular. Of course, the main point, the main thrust of this episode is the conversation between Jesus and the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. But before we get there, we've got a few things to talk about that really set this up. Okay, so where do you want to start?
So first of all, I think it's good to recognize that things are heating up with Rome.
Okay.
So Dominus, the Roman magistrate over the area, he has put out a poster.
By the way, I think Dominus and Quintus are the same person.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, because Dominus,
and then
I think it's like a title.
Gaius.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, Dominus is a title.
Quintus
is his name.
Is the name. Got it.
Yeah, so he's had a poster hung around the town that essentially says no religious gatherings can occur unless synagogue gatherings and the Hebrew school gatherings, and the person named Jesus of Nazareth is sought for questioning. Because he had said earlier, I don't like that guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't like Jesus because Jesus took away his star tax collector who was bringing in a lot of money Rome, right?
Yeah.
And so he lost Matthew to Jesus, and now he is basically fired up about the fact that this you know, nomadic teacher who has just shown up in his world needs to be dealt with in some way.
Okay, so you're exactly right. Things are heating up with Rome. I also really like the way they're setting up, as we've mentioned here, the whole first series, this first season, I should say, took place largely in Capernaum, almost exclusively in Capernaum, except for a few vignettes in other places. And now everybody's leaving, and so there's this really nice musical montage where people are packing.
Right.
Everybody's packing.
Yeah.
Nicodemus and his wife are getting ready to leave, and Peter's saying goodbye to his wife. Everybody's packing, and they're going to meet at the well. You remember that? At dawn.
Mm-hmm. And not the well where he meets the woman, not to be confused.
They're in town at Capernaum.
Yeah.
And remember that Jesus had said to Nicodemus,
this
is
where
we'll be.
The door is open. The invitation
is open. The door is open.
Yeah.
Come. And there's this great scene there just at the end of the montage where they're all gathered. And okay, that's everybody.
And Jesus says,
Jesus
is there anyone else?
Is there anyone else? Are we missing anybody? And Nicodemus, artfully, you know, the way they've done this is really artful. He's just around the corner, and he's torn, even there, you know,
he's up
to the threshold.
He's weeping.
He's crying. He's weeping. Yeah. He wants to come, but he can't come. But there's this little,
Simon
that finds the money? Somebody finds the money.
Little velvet bag full of gold.
And then Jesus mouths the words, you came so close.
Yeah.
So you see,
but he also says that was left for us
by
a friend of mine. So again,
the door's open.
Jesus is positive, even though Nicodemus has not accepted the invitation.
Yeah.
Jesus knows that maybe he's within earshot, and he's speaking of him as his friend.
As his friend. Yeah, I love this idea, and again, we mentioned this, but I want to say it again. Very often in our evangelism, in our witnessing, in our ministry to others, we communicate this kind of all or nothing approach. It's right now time. If you don't make this decision now, you will never have this opportunity again. That's not true.
Yeah.
That's not true at all. And I, as an evangelist, have been guilty of that in my preaching at times, in my speaking to others at times. No.
The door of probation is
just
open a crack.
As long as there is blood flowing through your heart, air in your lungs.
There's hope.
There is hope.
Yeah.
And so Jesus, is the invitation extended to Nicodemus? Yes. Was it a once and you got to take it right now or leave it forever? No. That's an open invitation. And Nicodemus here signals in a subtle but important way, because they're obviously going to need resources for their journey.
Right.
I'm not ready. It's too much. It's too big for me right now. Mm-hmm. But here is a token of my presence.
Right.
Jesus discerns this. Of course, nobody else discerns this. But I really like that scene. And when Jesus said those words, you came so close, it really moved me.
Yeah, it was deep. And the fact that Nicodemus had previously acknowledged Jesus as his rabbi was pretty phenomenal, right?
That's big, that's big.
And he wants to come with Jesus on this journey, this expedition, this adventure of ministry. And Jesus had told him, yeah, you'll lose a lot. You'll have to give up a lot. Mm. But Jesus was compassionate yes. toward him and understands that, what did he say? He said, you're along in years and you know, he has a wife and his wife is all concerned about losing their position in
and their good
the structure,
life.
Their good life. I like my life. And he yeah. says, well, I like our life too, right? So,
but this is true to life, Ty.
It is true to
this
life.
This is true to life. I mean, I have met and you have met dozens, hundreds, perhaps thousands of people in our collective ministries where people want to follow, but it's a lot to ask.
It is.
It's a little too big, and people have their various and sundry reasons. Well, I can't follow because, and for me it's difficult because, and so Jesus here recognizes this is a big ask. It's a lot bigger ask, let's be honest. This would be a more difficult decision for Nicodemus to make than any of the single disciples. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the single disciples is a stonemason, right? Where they had that conversation at
He's
the
He's like, I'm done
wedding.
With that.
Yeah,
sure, I'll come.
And that job is done. And I'll, you know, I'm happy to be an itinerant traveler. I can go town to town. I can, you know, ply my trade. Mm. But what would Nicodemus be leaving behind? He'd be leaving behind his reputation.
Right.
His standing in the Sanhedrin, probably his source of income. Perhaps
his wife. His grandchildren.
So it's a big ask. Yeah. And we need to be mindful when we give the invitation for people to become followers of Jesus. For me, when I became a follower of Jesus, I was 23 years old. I was a purple-haired punk rocker studying medicine at a state university. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a wife. Becoming a follower of Jesus did have a cost, but it was the kind of cost that a young, you know, free, dexterous person in his early 20s can make. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally shifted the entire direction of my whole life and decided not to go into medicine and to become a pastor. Okay, that's one kind of thing. When you became a follower of Jesus, you were a teenager.
Right.
Right, so you're still, there's so much plasticity when you're young and single and all of that. And we need to be mindful that if people are coming that have families and businesses and whole cultures,
right?
You think of like a Muslim coming to faith in Jesus. Well, that's not just like, oh yeah, I'll become a follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That could be a life and death decision.
It really.
I mean, right?
It not only could be, for many people it has been.
It has been and is. And so it's important for us to not flatten the sort of topographical nature of people's experiences. Right. And I like the fact here that Jesus doesn't do that with Nicodemus. He says to him, look, I get it. It's going to be hard.
Yeah, his final parting words are basically, you're my friend, just so you know.
Just so you know.
I regard you positively. If you fast forward in the narrative of Scripture, and we're not there yet, Nicodemus actually becomes an open follower of Jesus.
Yeah.
So we know that from the unfolding of the biblical narrative.
Yeah.
He's holding all of this in his heart. He's collecting all of these theological insights and perceptions that he's gained from Jesus.
Correct.
And he is a follower of Jesus at this point, but he can't quite get
he
over
can't get
the
over
hump.
The threshold. One of the things I love to say when I teach at Arise, which is a discipleship and an evangelism school that Ty and I run, and one of the things that you really need to communicate to people that are really enthusiastic and passionate and especially fresh in their journey and they're witnessing to their family members or friends and others is that, look, the door that's, I'll use my spinning chair here as an illustration. I say to people, look, the door that's open today might be closed tomorrow, but the door that's closed today can also become open tomorrow.
Right.
People are not static. People are changing. They could be closed today and open tomorrow, or open today and closed tomorrow, which is why we need to understand the situation, the circumstance, and continue to keep that
which
invitation.
Which means we need to always be open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There needs to
the
be...
The door can be closed on their side,
exactly.
but it should never be
not
closed
on our
side. Yeah.
Which is why I think Jesus says there at the well, he says, a friend.
Yeah.
A friend. Okay, and then one more quick scene that I want to get to before we get to the woman at the well is where Gaius goes to visit Matthew's parents. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no textual warrant for this, but it does move the story along. And basically, it's the idea that Matthew has asked a favor of Gaius. Gaius is a friend to Matthew, right? Like a loose friend. But now that Matthew's gone, you get the sense that Gaius misses him.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes as a favor to Matthew to basically bring the house and to bring his resources and his money. They say, we don't want his money. And I really like it where the father at one point goes, do you even know my son?
And Gaius,
Gaius says, do you?
Right, yeah.
Great line
He's
there.
Run off to follow this preacher. There's a little bit of a glimmer of hope there that you can see in the parents, like, maybe our son is finally doing the right thing.
Correct.
You know? Maybe he's moving in a different direction.
Yeah.
Gaius gives them the key, and this is very interesting because after giving them the key and they reluctantly accept it, he says in so many words, there's one more thing. They go outside, and here's this dog that belonged to Matthew, right? And these Jewish parents, I mean, we take it for granted that dogs are pets, but not for Jews, first century at least. And they're like, how does it work? They literally look at the dog and say, how does it work? What do we do with this? And
it's
Gaius
funny.
Has to explain, your son is looking out for you,
right?
Yeah,
that's right? really cool.
And
that's
then
a cool
I
scene.
Really like where Gaius says, really reluctantly, he says, I know people who are fond of your son, slightly, a little bit. A little bit fond of your son. He's speaking of himself.
Of course he is.
I mean, their hearts were connected on some level,
yeah.
even though it was a weird relationship, right?
So now they have left. The musical montage comes to its end, and they get to kind of a crossroads, and they think they're going to go one way. Jesus says, actually, we're going to go another way into Samaria.
And they're like, are you telling a joke?
Yeah, the disciples are confused, so let's have a look at that clip.
We need to adjust our course 30 degrees.
We're not going to the Jordan. We're going through Samaria.
Are you telling a joke?
There's a place there I want to stop. Plus, it makes our journey shorter by almost half.
And our odds of violent attack more likely by double.
Is that an exact figure?
Forgive me, Peter, but it's safer to go around Samaria by way of the Jordan than the Decapolis.
Would you join me for safety reasons?
But Rabbi, you're Samaritans.
Good observation, Big James. What's your point?
Rabbi, these were the people that profaned our temple. With the dead bones. They hated
us. They fought against us with the Seleucids in the Maccabean Wars. They haven't even spoken to a Samaritan.
And we destroyed their temple 100 years ago.
Mm.
And none of you here were present for any of these things.
Come on now.
This is pretty phenomenal.
What Jesus does there is amazing. He basically says, yeah, they've done wrong to our people.
But we've done wrong to them. Yeah. Yeah, we're not fundamentally better than them. They're not fundamentally better than us.
There are no innocent figures in history, in terms of historical figures, historical nations, empires.
Right.
There's not, I know we often think good guys, bad guys, and there is, you know, definitely worse cultures and worse empires and better cultures, but nobody gets off scot-free.
No.
Nobody gets off scot-free. The record of history is what it is. And so Jesus is like, yeah, they did that to us, and we did this to them.
Yeah. This is a theme that shows up a few times. This reminds me of when Peter is just completely blown away that Jesus is calling Matthew, right? And he says he's a tax collector, so this is different, right?
Yeah.
And Jesus says, what does he say to him?
Something like, Get used to different.
Yeah, you were surprised when I called you. Why are you surprised when I'm calling him?
Correct.
Okay, so literally from a biblical standpoint, again, getting into the biblical theology behind this thinking, right? You and I have never witnessed anybody do anything that was so bad that you and I wouldn't do the same thing, given the same pressures and circumstances and genetics and upbringing.
Right.
All of us, according to Scripture, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, not one,
come on now.
According to Scripture. And these guys are not different than these guys.
Correct.
So we're as much inclined to stratify the world and society. Some are good, some are bad, some are better than others. And Jesus just says, what's your point?
Yeah.
I love those words. What's your point, James?
Yeah,
Astute observation. They're Samaritans.
What's your point?
I know that. I still want to go there.
Yeah.
You're not bringing any new knowledge to the table. I know they're Samaritans. I know they've done wrong, but I know we've done wrong to them as well.
I got to tell you, I just had the most amazing encounter, and I'll tell this story very quickly. I was just in Wyoming recently with my good friend of ours, Pastor Nathan Renner, and we went to this hot springs in a little town there in southern Wyoming, and it's a place called Thermopolis, and there's these travertine hot springs that spring up from the ground, and you can go there. There's a public bathhouse. It's free. We go there on our off days for climbing because it's hot water. It feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nathan and I went into the bathroom there, and I just remarked to Nathan, because we had just been fishing and we didn't have our shampoo and soap with us, I said, man, I wish I had some soap and shampoo. And then there's a gentleman in the stall that says, I have some. He just overheard me saying this, and he comes out, and he's this great, big, tall, enormous, tattooed Native American. And where I come from in South Dakota, I was born in Wyoming, raised in South Dakota, there's a lot of Native Americans there. And he's this great, big, intimidating-looking figure. But he's overheard a couple guys that he doesn't know say, oh, I've got some soap and shampoo. And he gives us the soap, and he gives us the shampoo. We end up having a conversation that lasted more than a half an hour. And we're just asking him about his reservation, where he's from, his ancestry, and he's just speaking with great enthusiasm. Now, this is Kitai. We're having a really great conversation back and forth, and he's asking us, and we're asking him, and at one point, we're talking about the history of America and the history of his people in particular, and he says, Ty, this was amazing. He says, well, when you guys came over, you did it, and then he stops himself, and he goes, well, not you guys, but the people that were before you. Nice. And in that moment, he was having a realization. He was recognizing what's happening here.
Right.
Yeah. If you go back far enough in history, your people have been bad to my people, and my people have been bad to your people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But how are we going to treat one another right now?
Yeah.
Right here today. And that's what Jesus is saying.
Jesus is doing something even more groundbreaking and revolutionary in the sense that he's flattening out this whole division between peoples. And he's saying this whole idea of my people, your people.
It's us.
It's us. There is no us and them. There's just us. That's all there is.
Amen. It was so cool to me when we were having this. His name was Tom, actually. Tom Elk. And just when he said that, and he caught himself because we were having this positive interaction, and he's like, not you guys.
That was very perceptive on his part, wasn't it?
Well, it was just so brilliant. And I thought to myself, there's not you and me. That's the thing that Jesus came to show. And that's what we're already seeing here in The Chosen is, it's not tax collectors and fishermen and the Rome. No, it's not them and us.
It's us.
It's us. Beautiful.
So then we come to the woman at the well, the encounter. Jesus.
They all go into town to buy some food.
Jesus deliberately positions himself
at
the well. He's just waiting there, right?
Yeah.
He knows she's coming somehow, and he is there when she arrives, and the tension in the air.
It's thick.
It's thick because these are Samaritans, and when Jesus says, I'd like a drink of water, would you get me a drink of water? She just doesn't know what to think because she's assuming what's going to happen is that here's a Jewish man, she's a Samaritan woman, what's going to happen?
Here comes the argument, here comes the condemnation.
He's going to sit there in judgment and condemnation on her, either ignore her or condemn her. Those are the two options.
Right.
She can't even conceive of the possibility of a third option, that a Jewish male would somehow receive a gift of water from the hands and the vessel. She says, isn't this vessel
going to be
unclean for you? Won't you be defiled? And she has a little attitude, right? And you can't
blame her for having an attitude.
She's been through a lot, and she cannot help but expect either to be ignored or to be condemned. And Jesus just gradually, skillfully begins to open a conversation.
Yes, thank
David,
you.
I'd like to suggest that the gospel is the highest form of healing psychology.
Whoa, come on.
Now, in our culture now, we talk about, you know, counselors and psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists, and you go with someone and you deliberately sit with them to have an interaction in order to open up whatever traumas and dysfunctions and wounds that are inside of you, right? It's an appointment you make and you go. This is Jesus doing it real time, just as an interaction with a woman. He is the great physician, not only of physical ailments.
Come on.
He is the great physician of psychological, emotional, relational trauma and dysfunction. Mm. And here's this woman. She's been through some stuff. She's got miles on her soul.
She's
got miles on her soul, and they are hard miles. She's haggard. She's worn. She's tired. She's coming to the well.
She's jaded.
She's coming at a time of the day to avoid contact with all the other women because they don't want to be seen with her. They don't want to be around her. And Jesus, I guess my point is that these scenes show us Jesus gradually opening up her heart.
Yes.
She responds with barbs, but he doesn't respond to the barbs. He just keeps moving forward. Well, what about, and how about, and gradually you watch her soften.
Yeah.
You watch her soften because Jesus is kind of cradling her wounded heart in his hands.
Beautiful.
And gently handling her, knowing that she is wounded. And as she begins to open up, it dawns on her, wait a minute, I'm not sensing condemnation here. I'm not sensing anything incriminating.
Yeah.
And that's all she's ever really known.
She has a snarkiness to her. She has a...
Which you would expect.
She has an irritation to her. I mean, this scene plays out very much like I imagine it in my mind's eye, where she rebuffs Jesus repeatedly, but
right.
Jesus, with a calm, patient, winning persistence...
Right.
Softens her and opens her up. So this was a long dialogue. We're going to look at two clips. So let's look at the first of those clips and just really pay attention to the way that Jesus disarms her obvious hostility.
I'd still like a drink of water if you can spare it.
Amazing what a parched throat will do. Aren't I unclean to you?
Mm.
Won't you be defiled by this vessel?
Maybe some of my people say that about your women, but I don't.
Yeah? And what do you say?
I say if you knew who I am, you'd be asking me for a drink.
This is incredible.
Really?
And I would give you living water.
Hmm.
Would. Except that you have nothing to draw water with, and this is a deep well. Besides, what do you need from me if you have your own supply of living water?
Long story.
But Jewish water is better than Samaritan water. Hmm?
That's not what I said.
Are you a better man than our ancestor Jacob, who dug this well?
I knew Jacob.
Your water is better than his?
I know Jacob.
I know Jacob.
And everyone who drinks this water will thirst again.
Mm.
But whoever drinks the water that I give him will never be thirsty again.
This is so good. Watch this.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm.
The water I give will become in a person
a spring
of water welling up to eternal life.
Really?
Yes, really.
She's still hard.
Prove it.
First, go and call your husband and come back.
About to prove it.
I will show you both.
I don't have a husband.
You are right.
You've had five
husbands.
Okay, there we go. There's
and
a little
softening.
The man
you're living with now is not your husband.
What? What?
Oh, I see.
This nervous laugh.
That was
You're
great.
A prophet. You're
a prophet.
At me.
So now she's thinking,
here we go.
Coming here alone is I can escape being condemned.
I'm not here to condemn you.
I've made mistakes. Too many. But it's men like you who have made it impossible for
see,
me to do anything about it.
How?
Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews insist Jerusalem is the only place for true worship.
They say that because the temple is there.
Yeah. Exactly where we're not allowed.
I'm here to break those barriers.
I came to break those barriers.
And the time is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father.
So,
confusion.
Where am I supposed to go when
what?
I need God?
What?
I've never received anything from God, but I couldn't thank him even if I did.
Anywhere. God is spirit.
Here we go. I love
and
this.
The time is coming and is now here. That it won't matter where you worship, but only that you do it.
Yes.
In spirit
and in truth.
And truth. Heart and mind. That is the kind of worshiper he's looking for. It won't matter where you're from or what you've done.
Look at her processing.
But she's
processing. What? I've never heard anything like this in my whole life. All I am familiar with is this mountain or this mountain,
right.
this place, geographic
religious
location
argumentation.
Of worship, this geographic location of worship. Everybody's arguing, where's the place? And Jesus says, no. God is a spirit, and he's looking for those who will worship him in spirit and in truth. It's
Hallelujah.
Heart and mind. It's just, this is groundbreaking revelation.
Yeah.
She's never heard anything like this in her life.
She's having the same experience that Nicodemus had when Jesus says something, he doesn't know where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in that world, in that context, people, there were just only so many items on the menu. There were only so many offerings at the buffet, and people knew where to put each of those.
Right.
Well, Jesus shows up. He doesn't sound like a Pharisee. He doesn't sound like a traditional Jew. He doesn't sound like a Sadducee. He doesn't sound like a zealot or an Essene.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this guy? You see it with Nicodemus and his interaction there. You see it with Matthew. And now you see it with the woman at the well. She's processing. That's exactly the right word. What?
Yeah, the key line here, David, I think, is I'm here to break those barriers.
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
Of course.
I'm here to break those barriers. What barriers? The barriers that people create to divide people. And these are
back to the us and them.
Yeah, us and them. This is a context in which those barriers are religious in nature. Imagine this.
They're religious, they're linguistic, yeah. They're geographical. Yeah.
The very thing that was meant to bring people together is being used to drive people apart.
Yep.
Right? I came to break down those barriers, Jesus says. And this is a powerful insight that is developed by all of the biblical writers, all the New Testament writers after this, but especially Paul, you know, where he sees in Jesus that the walls of hostility and enmity are going to be brought down between people.
Yes.
The vertical relationship with God is healed for the purpose of healing our vertical relationships.
Horizontal
relationships. I mean, John is so explicit on this that he says in 1 John, that if you say you love God, that's the vertical, right? But you don't love your brother, you're lying. There is no authenticity to your religious claim of vertical relationship with God. You sing songs of praise, you give money to the church, you go to the right building on the right day, you sit in the pew, you go through the motions of religiosity, right? But if you hate your fellow human beings in your heart, Jesus is essentially telling her, well, it's all a big charade. It's not real. And God is looking, I mean, I'm just going to translate when he says to her, God is a spirit and he's looking for those who worship in spirit and truth. Essentially he's saying he's looking for authentic worshipers whose worship of God pans out in the way they treat people.
Not just
vertically,
but horizontally.
And Jesus is modeling that. He's treating her the way God would treat her in the circumstance as a modeling of the way we're to treat one another.
All of that is beautifully said, Ty, and so true that the you could say it this way, the horizontal is a barometer of the vertical, right? We can gauge the temperature of this by looking at this.
Yeah, the moment I look up to God, he points me to people.
Correct. Well, and Jesus says this, doesn't he, in Matthew chapter 25. He says, whatever you've done to the least of these, I was naked, you gave me clothes. But Master, when did we do that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, when you did it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, did that to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so the woman is slowly softening. It's dawning on her that Jesus is different. And there's that great scene there where he starts telling her the names of her first husband and then her second husband. I mean, that scene is powerful. And then as that scene kind of draws to its close, she has the realization. She's transitioned from hardness and,
She's not just softened. She's over the moon with joy.
She's enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And so let's look at that scene.
I have not revealed myself to the public as the Messiah. You are the first. It would be good if you believed me.
I love that
so
much.
That's great. Here they come.
You picked the wrong person.
I came to Samaria just to meet you. Do you think it's an accident that I'm here in the middle of the day?
I am rejected by others.
I know.
But not by the Messiah.
But not by the Messiah.
Woo! Come on. There it is. That's where the penny drops.
Things.
The realization right
you
there.
You are the Christ.
You're the Christ.
Hmm. He affirms.
He's like, yeah.
That's the title here. I am he.
I'm going to tell everyone.
I'm going to tell everyone.
I was counting on
this. I was counting on it.
That's so good.
Spirit and truth.
Spirit and truth.
It won't be all about mountains or temples.
Soon.
I love this. Promise?
Just the heart.
Promise?
You promise.
I promise.
Beautiful.
I love this scene here.
Told me everything
of them passing one another.
Oh, he must be the Christ.
They're like, hey, lady, you forgot your pot.
Hey, wait.
The only one that smiles is Mary.
Oh, yeah, Mary gets it. She knows this story. This is her story. That's a great observation.
Yeah.
Mary's smiling because Mary sees in this woman, this is my, I know this story.
Mary sees the woman, all the dudes see the water pots.
Great point.
That she left. Hey, by the way, since we mentioned Mary, I just want to throw out there, some people may wonder, I've actually had people ask this question before, you know, what in the world? A woman traveling with the disciples? Right. That didn't happen, did it?
Right.
According to Luke chapter 8, the first few verses.
Yeah.
Luke chapter 8, everybody, take a look at the first few verses.
It wasn't just Mary. It says there were women.
Yeah. There were other women, and they were traveling with Jesus and the disciples. They were a part of this heavenly posse, if you will, that are going to do damage to the kingdom of darkness.
Okay, so Ty, in our last couple minutes here, we've mentioned that, you know, you kind of have the arrows being pulled back all season.
Yeah.
And here, you know, the fields are white for the harvest. Right. The woman runs away. We know where this is going in season two. As we reflect back over the whole of the Story Encounters series, is there an instance or a conversation or a scene that stands out to you as a favorite, or one or two, or just one, or what do you think?
For me, there is one scene that pretty much eclipses all others, and that's where Jesus is following Mary out of the pub. And he very specifically speaks her name, and she's not heard her name since she was a little girl. Mary, Mary of Magdala, and it dawns on her, this is somebody unique. And when he puts his hands on her head and he lays claim to her.
Wow.
He says, you are mine, quoting the Isaiah 43 passage.
Beautiful.
I was so deeply moved by that scene. It was overwhelming.
Yeah, that's where there have been numerous instances for both of us where it has transcended an entertainment experience. You're not just watching something.
Right.
You are experiencing something.
Yeah.
And for you, that was the scene. For me, I just can't get away from Jesus' interaction with Nicodemus.
I know. It was overwhelming.
I mean, it just the dialogue, the back and the forth, the turning. How can these things be?
Yeah.
I mean, he asks that with such sincerity, with such earnestness. Whoa, 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 whoa. How?
Do you remember the part where he says, what is your heart telling you? And he said, all my heart is telling me is...
He says, my heart is full of fear.
Fear and wonder.
Mm.
And the only thing my heart can tell me is that you are standing on
holy ground.
Holy ground.
Yeah, no, that's a great...
Just so
well, we hope that you have enjoyed the Story Encounters series. We have thoroughly enjoyed doing this. It has been, I mean, really, it's been highlight after highlight after highlight after highlight.
It sure has.
And I'm in expectation of what season two and three and everything beyond holds. Mm. Because if it's been this good in season one, it can only get better in seasons two, three, and beyond.
Yeah.
And so a big shout out to Dallas Jenkins and his team and the studio there, Angel Studios, for doing this. And a big shout out to the Hope Channel for inviting us to come on and have this conversation.
And to you for joining us on this exciting journey. Thank you so much. And hopefully the conversation is not yet done.